Hey everyone, welcome to our special mating rituals episode of the show. Before we start into it proper though, we just wanted to remind everybody that the newest book of The Wandering Inn just came out on audiobook, The General of Israel. Be sure to check it out.
Hi everybody, welcome back to No Killing Goblins, the Wandering Inn podcast, where we talk about The Wandering Inn and various subject matters therein. I'm here with my co-host, Dryness. Say hi, Dryness.
Hey there, everybody.
It's been a long week for everybody. We just finished the 7-day write-a-thon from Pirate Abba and got to enjoy the 80k chap, like, of words they wrote in a week. In between all that, not a lot has happened for me. How are you doing, Dryness?
I'm doing pretty good. Conveniently enough, it's my birthday, so the 7-day chapters all in a row, ending right pretty much on my birthday, with my favorite character as the one of the central characters, is just a great week in general. Not a great week in other ways, but you know, it's just life.
First off, how come you didn't tell me it was your birthday? I know I said happy birthday to you because you mentioned it was coming up, but holy crap. Well, all right. I guess I'm not important enough to be included in your birthday messages.
I did mention it, actually, and I don't... Birthday messages? What birthday messages? I'm confused now.
I mean, I always do the thing where I just have a little Discord party with everybody I know who's who knows about me and who has my birthday thing. But I will stop teasing you and talk instead about our guests. Today we have Lynette. Say hi, Lynette.
Hello, everybody. Good to see you again.
And the wonderful Mamsie.
Hi.
We have these two wonderful ladies with us because we're going to be discussing one of the more unusual chapters that Pirate ever wrote. It's a side story, labeled as a side story, Mating Rituals. But before we even get to the chapter, we're going to discuss some fan mail and a few other things and introduce Mamsie. Mamsie, tell us all about yourself. What got you started with The Wandering Inn?
Well, Lynette, in fact, was my introduction to The Wandering Inn. I frequent Lynette's place of business, and one day I came in and Lynette said, "Oh, you have got to read this web serial that I'm reading right now." And I said, "What's a web serial?" And after we took 10 or so minutes to describe that, then Lynette started telling me about the characters, and I was immediately hooked. I love fantasy, sci-fi, and the idea that there was a mountain of content that I could catch up on, right? Because I think at that point we were in volume 7 or maybe already into volume 8, really appealed because I love to binge things, so.
We need more bingers.
I am very happy that I just gushed to everybody I know about this series, and most of my customers look at me and they pat me on the head and they go, "Yes, yes, yes, it's cute. Help me with this other thing, please." But Mamsie was very enthusiastic in return, and we both like reading and we both like fantasy, and she was willing to listen every time I opened my mouth about it. So,
well, it's like getting a story from another person, you know.
Right?
Yeah.
Fully taking credit.
It's always a great feeling when you get somebody else reading a story, especially a long one like this. Although, I actually have a friend, he thought he was caught up. He was about 2-ish chapters behind. He goes to catch up. He's like, "I'm just one chapter left," and I say, "No, you're 7. Pirate wrote one a day last week."
who's the person who's one a day who just caught up? Is it somebody new?
Well, he's not on the Discord yet. He's holding off until he gets caught up. It's another one of mine and our other guest we had on once, Hicks's friends.
I feel like I'm the only person not contributing to Pirate Abba's growth and more people reading The Wandering Inn. Because all I'm doing is, like, these podcasts and things, and it's all going to the same people. And maybe I should just get a sign or something, stand outside my door until I pick up a few people.
Find a librarian. If you can get a librarian, they'll continue spreading the word, and then you can just go back to the podcast thing. That'd be great.
Yeah, but
yeah,
then...
or I just like to try and get physical copies of stuff like this one and then put it just in the local library. Just buy four or five.
I know. I mean,
Yeah.
what could we do without a physical copy? You know, a pirate. It would be nice to have one of those. We have a comic, which doesn't have a physical copy yet. I don't have one in my hand yet, but I will. In any
It'll
case,
come.
Yep.
It'll come.
it'll come. In any case, let's talk about fan mail. You guys responded to our request for some commentary, some communication between yourselves and us. We have two emails to read today. Why don't we start with the first one, Dragonus? You want to take it over?
Sure. So hold on, let me pull it up. We've got Seth here. So Seth, I just want to say first of all, thank you for sending this in. I definitely like it's a bit of a longer one. I won't have to, I think, go through the whole thing word for word. We can start with everyone's favorite dead horse, mayonnaise, because I agree there is some weirdness with food here. So his comment is, I both agree and disagree with you regarding the statement that mayonnaise is too basic a concept to be believable with skills. If it's considered too basic, then the whole concept of bringing food, fast food to Inverse kind of falls apart. None of the foods Aaron makes are really that revolutionary, as beside the desserts, which are more understandable in terms of lack of experimentation, given the expensiveness of sugar and baking soda slash baking powder not being around, most are just jamming ingredients onto wheat-based products as her attempts with pasta, pizza, and hamburgers. When looking into it, the history of mayonnaise as it exists today is, from what I can tell, in the mid-1700s, which makes it more recent than other foods introduced to the Inverse, such as chocolate, coffee, and popcorn. However, it seems that the aioli made with olive oil and garlic is much older, given the fact that you have Inverse alchemists running around, boiling things together all the time. You would think that coffee would have been identified pretty early, even just like as a minor stamina potion or something. And just to break up this one because it's a long one, I agree.
Yeah. So this is for those who missed our last episode where Dragnus and I were skeptical of the provenance of mayonnaise and whether or not it's as much of a culinary wonder as Pirate thought it was. We got some Pirate heckled us on the Reddit post, which I whatever. God damn. We talked about that, and this is entirely in response to that. And my thing is, I do understand where you're coming from. My exception to this wasn't so much that it isn't a possibility. It's just that the development is such a fine thing. I mean, cooks are constantly looking for new ways to reinvent themselves. And one of the reasons why it was developed in the 1700s, as you noted, is because it was supposed to be new food for nobles, and there are so many nobles in this world, and so many cooks with so many levels, and so many gourmands and things. It just seemed difficult. But other than that, I think what he talked to us a lot about other stuff. What else did Seth say?
Taken all together, either Erin isn't really producing much new at all, in which case the story falls apart and she doesn't make money, or the Inverse is kind of in a culinary rut. Potentially there are a few things I think may limit the ideas for food recipes to spread as quickly in the Inverse before Earthers arrive. You know, people aren't writing them down, they're being instructed through their skills, and transference of skills is harder to do. If you look at YouTube channels that research historic recipes like Townsend's, hey, Townsend's Cooking and Tasting History are two of my favorite YouTube channels. A lot of the recipes written down are esoteric with no measurements, are hard to follow, don't mention basic principles because they assume you know them, or are not even recipes as much as historians setting the scene of bigger events, like describing some feast of dishes in a few lines of prose. Esoteric ingredients are harder to find, limiting experimentation. The highest level cooks, who are most likely to experiment, are probably sought after, paid chefs of the rich. Some of the exceptions we see are in large cities such as Palace, but in the case of Liscor, Aaron was cooking for the masses, which the higher level chefs may not be as likely to do. given increased distances, expensiveness of message, recipes may not travel. So I kind of agree. I think that there is good enough explanation for how a lot of recipes could be weirdly staggered, and that some of them should exist, some of them shouldn't, yet the timeline's all wonky, and it's very anachronistic between skills and lost knowledge and ancient civilizations. I just think mayonnaise specifically is too easy. The main thing that limited mayonnaise from existing was lack of preservative options, kind of. It's weird and complicated. Food history is stupid.
It's not stupid. The preservative option. Okay. Well, I'm not going to get into it because I know enough about it to just a hint of knowledge. Lynette, Mamsie, do you guys want to weigh in a little bit? What do you think about mayo being too simple as a introductory food from our perspective?
I'm gonna let Lynette go first.
Personally, I'm probably gonna say that mayonnaise isn't hard to make, and preservation runes being what they are, and cold storage being possible with temperature adjustment spells and what have you, I don't think the preserving the ingredients are too easy to get, and how to keep it is too easy also to get. I think I agree that mayonnaise isn't as revolutionary as maybe it was brought up to be. I do think that how you use it and the flavors that it can have based off of different types of oils. Or types of eggs, because there are, well, that's a spoiler. I can't say that. Anyway, it I don't think mayonnaise was revolutionary. I think Erin would probably get levels off of it because she's distributing it to so many different people. She's not trying to be secretive. She's not trying to hold on to it. She's not trying to, hoard it for just the elite.
Well, we were the discussion was mostly just how complicated it is and whether or not it's some kind of revolutionary thing. It wasn't so much about.
You just need something that would be an emulsifier. And if you have something that can be used, other than just your arm, then which, those get tired. But yeah, no, mayonnaise is kind of simple.
Have you all made mayonnaise before?
Yeah.
Yes.
So I've never done it, and although I have a vague idea about what goes in it, it's not something that I think I would have conceptualized as, hey, let me put these ingredients together to see if it makes something that can be used as a sauce or a dip. And
Here's the base of mayonnaise. It's oil and eggs.
right, so but when there are so many other things you can do with eggs and oil, who would necessarily think, I'm gonna put these two things together and whip them into a frenzy to create something new? I think it comes back to the experimentation. And I think that Dragoness is right that there are folks in the inverse who would have potentially discovered and experimented with this. But I think that communication being what it is, distance being what it is, and the proprietary nature of skill development and the creation of items, right? People know that people steal anything good and new if they can. I suspect that it exists elsewhere, but that it may not have made it to Israel, may not have made it to Lascaux,
I
or
don't know.
is just sort
Maybe.
of
It
elite.
gets treated, sorry, it gets treated as a surprise every time it gets brought up, anytime anyone takes it anywhere. And what it comes down to is emulsion is deep black magic, and it's something that is really important in cooking and the making of dressings and sauces and stuff like mayo, but is also really obscure. And I don't know. I don't want to get too caught up on it.
I think it's just the skill thing. It's if there's no experimentation because everyone is trusting on their basic cooking skill or their advanced cooking skill to just tell them how to do the thing that they're needing to do, then nobody's experimenting because they're just waiting around until the skill just plops the knowledge into their head.
I just don't know if I believe that happens with food, though. Because, okay, we know with alchemy and alchemists, and Octavia talks about this more later in the series, but this is just like just some background of the science of it all. Because Octavia already did that one big info dump on it the last episode we did. Alchemists, in many ways, never stop experimenting. Skills and transference of knowledge and gaining it from skills isn't as big of a deal with them because of just the nature of what they do encourages experimentation, even with the system attempting to smother innovation. That's food too. The two are too similar, and I don't want to go too deep on it, but this actually ties into the next little bit of this email about food carts. I did say something about food carts, and they I apparently did not come across right because it's
Well, we
not sure
should.
what Dragonus was getting at when he was mentioning vendors being a thing, as the chapter does mention that there are food vendors around. I'll
Well.
just say it's more what Aaron was making, which is just like ground beef put over a brazier so it smells nice and then handed to people with bread around it, is super basic as well. Like, if the food vendors exist, they should be giving stuff like that away. We see them
Also,
giving away weirder and more advanced and crazier stuff.
right, they would also have levels, right? They'd have skills and abilities and experience in this. But we did skip over one aspect of Seth's email where he mentions that recipe transference might have happened when Ryoka was at the inn and Ryoka left behind some recipes. Maybe she's the one who taught her how to do the whole mayo and various things in specific ways. I don't know.
Maybe. There's also the possibility that Aaron just had a vague idea of knowledge of it, and the skill filled in the blanks based off of stuff she'd heard and subconsciously remembered because the system's bullshit. The next two bits are getting sort of off the subject of food, with Saria's hand. This is a good point about how she's so accepting of the hand, but I also have to wonder about the willingness of well-traveled inverse people to be more accepting of body changes. And I definitely have to redact the rest of this because it does get into more spoilers. But yeah, body changing and skills that can change the shape of you or the body of you or like permanent long-term changes do exist. It's possible that Saria might be more caught up, or not caught up, but willing and accepting. But even then, we will see that it's not uncommon for these things to come with a amount of dysphoria, right? And Saria is just chill.
As an aside to this, I had a part of what I wanted to discuss when Seth sent this email that made me think about it, and it's something for everybody to hear to like talk about. So in the in-world gives you skills to adapt to the challenges that you face, right? One of the things that is interesting is how that would apply to someone with a physical or mental handicap or disability of some kind. We don't get a really good sense of that through Ryoka because she rejects leveling in general. But I always did wonder if there was a spell that was like inject antidepressants or something like that. At least
Well,
for me.
probably yes. There's a character later on who even comments on like maybe making her some tea.
Yeah, it's just
But
it was just something that came to mind. Do you think that's like how would that even work for
I have thoughts about it, and I'm just gonna go ahead and say if Pirate never touches this subject, I wouldn't blame them. It is dangerous ground to tread because any group of people is going to have its members have different opinions, different beliefs. No one is a monolith. Not everybody always can get along or agree to the same things. I think one example to point out would be a lot of the controversy revolving around cochlear implants in the deaf community. Something I'm not qualified to comment on, other than it's out there, it exists, and it is a really big deal to some people. I think every community has stuff like that. I see it in the autism community. I wouldn't want to touch it if I wasn't a part of it, or even if I was sometimes.
Yep, that's it. Okay, the last thing that Seth said is discussion topics when we asked for discussion topics, and I mentioned what's your ship? The response was his response is no. Do you guys have ships? I mean, Dragonus
Yes.
and I have ships, but what about the two of you?
This is relationships.
Yeah, does she not know what a ship is?
I guess not.
Yes.
I mean,
Yeah, ship is short for relationship, and ships can be a variety of types, so
Yes,
usually
then I
imaginary.
have ships.
So here's the deal. Ships are a very internet age culture thing, and it comes out of the fan culture that sprang up when it's always been there, but the fan culture that sprang up. And what would happen is oftentimes certain subsets of fandom would decide that for specific characters that don't necessarily have direct links belong together. For example, there would be ships between Buffy and other members of the Scooby Squad back in the Buffy days. There would be not, and oftentimes this would be done by queer folks, especially because you didn't see that kind of representation, so you would just make up your own connections. One of the more famous ships in recent years is, you ever watch the show Sherlock?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so between Benedict Cumberbatch and whoever was playing Watson, I never remember his name. So there were giant amounts of ships between the two of them, and between him and Moriarty, and between him and like everybody. It's just how people like create their own fan variations of realities in which relationships happen between them.
Okay,
And we were
gotcha.
discussing it.
My personal take is that we like characters. We find them either adorable or funny or relatable or just we like them in some way, and we want them to be happy. And sometimes the way we can think of to make them happy is to put them in a relationship with another person in that setting, or people in some cases.
Right.
Okay, so we've got a second email from Kevin, and Kevin says, "Great work on the podcast so far. I'm loving hearing the reactions you two and guests have for the questions you both asked on the episode. What food would I like to see is a breakfast burrito." Kevin wants to see a breakfast burrito. You hear
Oh,
that?
yeah.
I would actually love to see a breakfast burrito. I was just a burrito in general, and. There is, and for my ship question, Kevin always assumed Relk and Eren would be a thing romantically. Now that's interesting because I did think that for like 5 seconds until the whole end of volume one shit happened. Okay, moving on from emails. So today we're going to be discussing the first side story, mating rituals. For those who are listening in who might have just read it or something. It was originally designed to be an actual side story. This was when Pirate was still like trying to write normal chapters and then do extra chapters on top of that. And one of the extra chapters was mating rituals, dealing specifically with sex and sex in world. So first impressions, what do you think of it? Lynette, let's start with you.
One of the things, as a woman, one of the things that I enjoyed the most or impressed me the most about Pirates writing whenever I first read it was that they weren't scared to talk about the outhouse. They weren't scared to talk about periods. They weren't, they didn't shy away from things that you're going to go through in your life, especially when you have species that can smell you. They know what your body's going through. They know if you've had a bad dinner the night before. They can tell when you're. I liked that that made sense to me, and it makes sense that the characters would choose different things based off of what they're going through. This meant that it was more focused on practicality for me and logistics behind all of that, because I'm sorry, you can't actually have someone who just suddenly shows up in the middle of nowhere and just lives on their own for months and months and months and okay, but now there are wild animals. What happens when she starts bleeding? And somebody looks at me and goes, "What do you mean bleeding? What kind of bleeding? She's not hurt." And I'm like, "Oh God, did you forget the way the body works? Because apparently you did." I like that that got discussed. And the fact that the, not just the intricacies around sex and talking about sex, but talking about different types of sex, got Aaron embarrassed and awkward and real for me. That was so viscerally painful and real, and I was laughing and my face was red and I kept wanting to skip forward and I didn't, and I'm glad I didn't. It was worth it.
Oh yeah, no, Aaron survives a great deal in this chapter, because if I was in Aaron's place, I'd have just gotten up and left the restaurant.
She did do that eventually. She did just finally stand up and walk off. But it took a minute.
How about you, Mamsie?
So I have two thoughts, I think. The first was that it kind of came out of nowhere, in the sense that, you know, Celis and Kershaya sit down with Aaron and are like, "So, you need to have sex or do something." And there had been no, although Pirate had been open about things like periods and outhouses prior, there was no sort of indication that Aaron was interested or bothered. But Celis and Kershaya seem to take the fact that Aaron is not having sex as a problem they need to remedy. And that was interesting, and I think at the time I read it, tried to chalk it up to species differences, because there is a lot in that chapter about, you know, Celis asks Aaron, "Do humans really put it in their mouths?" And it's a sort of, it's also wildly penile focused. I know that Drake's that we haven't seen a lot of discussion of homosexuality in the book at this point. But there, it's very hetero. And there's the second point that I wanted to make was that there's this conflation between sex and relationships. And I'm not sure if they were just using the word relationship to mean sexual interaction, but it did feel a little bit like there was, they want her to have companionship, but the way that they're proposing her to have companionship is to go out and bang some folks.
I think it was, for me personally, it was like a reflection of social mores. There isn't a sophisticated type of language to... Okay, I'm going to take a step back and start over. When I read this chapter, I thought that it was not accurate at all. It got the feeling right of having like a couple of girlfriends or a couple of guy friends, and they just chat about sex and the weird stuff that happens and what you're doing and comparing sizes and all that shit. But what was missing from it was the kind of empathetic nature to it all. I don't know if it happens for you guys ever in your life, but if you ever had like frank discussions about relationships and sex with somebody who was a little bit older, who might know a little bit more, in your 20s or in your teens, whatever, and there's this sense that's missing for me. I'm a queer man, and I don't a queer cis man, so it's not necessarily something that it is accurate. Maybe I'm not speaking to the experience properly, but whenever I think of a circle of women, whenever I was included in that circle of women for whatever reason, this is, the attitude was right, but the experience was not quite, it didn't quite hit the mark. Women, yeah, it didn't quite hit the mark for me.
Can you identify which point of it didn't hit the mark? I feel the same way, but I'm not sure I'm able to articulate why.
Okay. Well, what were you saying, Dragons?
Oh, I'll just kind of weigh in. I've heard of a great way to put this, because it's this whole chapter is in many ways kind of a foreign experience to me. I am, I guess, the only way I can think of to put this, a bit of a prude. Like, when I'm hanging around with, I'm at a gay bar, hanging out with a couple gay guys I know, it seems like in those spaces, more than in the more hetero spaces I hang out in sometimes, it is, I think, just more culturally appropriate or acceptable to get into conversations like this one. And even then, I just kind of, nod and excuse myself to the bathroom. I'm not like a talk about this stuff kind of person. I God, there's a non-zero chance some way half through the way through this episode, I just disappear. So I can't really speak to the accuracy of it.
Look at this,
I
staple his
can
feet to the floor.
say, though, if I had to describe how this read, it read vaguely like pirate aping Sex in the City, but with like one of the involved parties in the conversation just wanted to die and not talk about
There was no
Okay.
Miranda
You
in this, if you
know what
use
I
that
think
analogy.
this came out of? You know what I think this came from? I think this was pirates semi self-insert into Aaron's shoes and defending all these other people on the, or defending their writing against all these other people on the internet who kept going, why doesn't Aaron hook up with somebody yet? Why hasn't Aaron, gone and stroked a knoll yet? Why? And Pirate's like, look, I don't need that. We don't need any of that. It's not necessary.
I agree
And
with that.
in the story, it may not be necessary, but I think Pirate needed to actually try to put it out there that, you know what? There are different levels of desire in a lot of different type of people. And while we're looking at it, let's look at some of the different species. Let's just do some exploring. And I think that's kind of how this might have come about in the first place.
Maybe. I was not around when this got written, obviously. I came in much, much later. And I may and I just don't know if I've seen a lot of the comments in that way, but most of what I've read is just stuff down, in the comment section on the chapters themselves. I don't know if there was like, yeah, you get sort of a, oh, who's Aaron gonna date? When does romance come in kind of assumption, but I don't know if I've ever noticed anybody being pushy about it.
Okay, so going back to your question before, Mamsie, it's so what didn't hit for me was even using the Sex and the City analogy, there was no Miranda. There was no person who was, I think Kershaya was supposed to be it, but there was no perspective where it's gender neutral, where the person talks about sex frankly and without issue and interacts with this. With this group, as if they're talking about sex itself, what it means to them, how their emotions are placed, what it feels like, and why they enjoy it, and the experience of it.
Yes,
The
I
particular
agree.
pieces of sex were there. It wasn't about sex, if that makes sense. It was, as Pirate, we'll talk about it later, but Pirate notes in the in the author note that it's supposed to be comedic in nature, which is why I think there was so much more graphic, penile imagery, if that's what you want to call it.
Yeah, it's because dicks are inherently funny.
Yeah, they are. They
Like, there's no way, and I think that that section got the best laugh out of me too when they're like comparing, oh, just the differences between them and Kershaya, apparently terrified the one poor human she's ever slept with so much he couldn't get it up. I don't know what to say about that because that's just weird.
So does that answer your question, Mindy?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it made me there's never really a frank assessment or a frank approach. I'm not coming up with the right word here, but I agree
There's
with
no
what you said
honesty to
that
the
there is no
conversation.
honesty. It's a lot of it feels a little bit like talking about sex by people that have only heard about it and not actually done it.
Yeah, that was the thing. Like I said, there was no experienced person speaking to the actual experience of sex versus the more graphical parts of it, I guess.
I
It's a
guess,
lot
but
of deflection on Aaron's part and a lot of assumption on Celis and Kershaya's part because they don't realize until all the way end to the end of the chapter that Aaron's not done any of this before. So the assumptions that happen and the deflection that happens and all of the avoidance in the meantime, that's also very true to most of the plot lines Pirate tends to write in the first place. So.
Yeah. And like it makes sense to me that it's sort of like a light overview because at least from Kershaya and Celis's perception or perspective, this is three friends chatting about getting laid in a way that they're not having to talk about it like they're talking to somebody who's never experienced it, right? They're not going into sort of like that angle of Frank thing, they're having more the let's, chat and compare a few notes because hey, we've all been around the block, right? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. We're and just not getting it.
And what are you going to say?
And
No, I haven't been around the block. Nobody's going to say no.
yeah, it's that I definitely understood that, and when you take it from that perspective, it makes sense. But even in that kind of an environment when we're just, joking around and shooting shit and talking funny stuff, making fun of each other, there's always the sense that at least each person is on an equal, relatively equal level, and they're I don't know, maybe it's
Right, or
just unique to me.
if somebody doesn't write you, I've had these conversations with folks where you maybe four people in a group and three of you go, yeah, I know, right? And then one person's like,
Exactly.
what? And then you're like, oh, well, we have something to tell you about now, and let's talk about this. And there's more. It felt very surface level what this conversation was, and they and Celis
Yeah.
and Kershaya, although they picked up on the fact that Aaron wasn't engaged, they I. They weren't conscious in the way that I think most people would be about
Which is
Aaron's.
what felt off the most about it, because generally Celis and Kershaya are pretty perceptive, especially when
Yeah.
it comes to Aaron, right?
Yeah.
And the idea that Kershaya wouldn't like, I mean, she did pick it up eventually, but it just felt,
I wondered,
it felt weird.
can so they can Knowles can smell sex. Can they smell virginity?
I doubt
I
it.
doubt it.
Yeah.
They
That
can't
also, that
smell
virgin.
a hymen.
Okay. Hang on a second. Hang on a second.
That
We're not.
I strongly
Not that
doubt
a
that they'd be
hymen
able
is
to get
indicative
that
of
kind of detail.
virginity. That was a very
I was
heteronormative
going to
comment, and I
start,
shouldn't
yeah.
have. Yes, but
I mean, it was generally accurate enough to the subject, but it's
Well,
like
that's not
just.
the point I think she was trying to make. I'm sorry, Dries, but this is a big deal for me. Virginity is a made-up concept.
Hey, there you
It
go.
go. Oh, okay then. All right.
Yeah, it's a fucking made-up con. I mean, we understand it. We like it. I accept it as a concept
But the lines are
that exists,
arbitrary.
but there
Absolutely.
is no, like, yeah, the virginity moves to whenever the hell you want it. You could still be a virgin at 40 because you decide that's you haven't done the thing that makes you not a virgin anymore, and you prove me wrong. Okay, but
Anyways,
yeah, sorry.
I will say though, the second half is where the real comedy is to me, and it's 100% T'Kern. Poor T'Kern, who I'm half convinced was threatened by Kershaya into coming out there, and
Honestly.
probably told entirely the wrong things. He feels like somebody who has wandered into this with no idea what he's doing and no context for what Aaron's actually interested in.
No, he's been given a very specific set of instructions from Kershaya, and he's going to try to achieve that, but with no sense of how to actually interactively achieve that.
Yeah,
Okay,
especially his humans eat
Kershaya told
flowers
me,
concept.
right, Kershaya told me that humans like flowers. Do they like them to eat? Do they like them to smell? Well, they can't smell, not like we can smell. All right, so that means I go get really strong ones then. What are the strongest smelling flowers? Are these flowers? They must be flowers. They smell really strong. We'll try with those.
Okay.
It makes perfect sense, but he was completely off base in so many ways.
There's just so much about this this particular chapter that's meant to be comedic, and it is. I honestly found plenty of it funny, but I don't necessarily think Pirate wanted me to find certain of these things funny.
I mean, it's meant to be a comedic chapter. If it makes me laugh, I assume it's on purpose.
Yeah, I
find
think
fleshy
so.
things attractive.
And you know, there's better ways to word that, man.
They couldn't have just. I would have rather had the conversation be entirely about masturbation. And okay, I'm going to take it back a second and say there is a particular chapter of a book, and that resonated with me a lot. It has nothing to do with this. It's a different series, and in that book, it's a reflection of a conversation I had in one version over another with both women and men over the years. And essentially, it boiled down to attraction and sex between two people boils down to, especially for women more often than not, it always boils down to a complex factor of things. And you never know what those factors are until you do. You could be 30 years old and you could have done all of the physical things that come with the act of sex, and yet you've never really felt attraction or any kind of emotional resonance or just had a satisfying orgasm until you're much older, because you just never figured out the kind of things that you enjoy. What I appreciated about this chapter was that there is an immediate sort of assumption that in the TWI world, in Nahl society, and even in Drake society, it's encouraged to experience sex in a casual manner. You have access to some kind of birth control, some kind of protection, so that you can't just get randomly pregnant. And people are able to treat sex as something that's enjoyable and that two people can do together, and it doesn't bind them. There is no, I was a virgin before, but you touched my arm, so now we have to get married, Bridgerton style situation. At least not in this casual, more less noble social structure, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm trying to find a way to put this. I was when I was rereading this, said to myself, you know, I would love to get a chapter at some point where we get to something from the perspective of this Cullis guy and the therapy he had to go to after this bullshit.
Oh my God, this
I felt
poor
so sorry
man.
for him.
How could, like, both of them, let's be honest, both of them needed some kind of help. Because on the one hand, how did those two women convince these two men to go after Aaron in the first place? Because you have to imagine that they were gonna think, this is, they got bribed or something, and I
Well,
wondered what the bribe was.
T'Kern was told. We
T'Kern was told.
have up to this point seen enough of like the relationship Kershaya had with the other gnolls. T'Kern was told he was doing this. Celis probably said, "Oh, hey, I've got this human friend. She has an inn. She's super friendly. Doesn't know anybody. I think she needs to, you know, meet some people in town. You know, go down, say hi, introduce yourself, flirt a little bit." Yeah, I think that he wasn't bribed. He was just told, "Hey, cute girl out here. You should go say hi to her." And Cullis, from what
Well,
we see, is the kind of person who is entirely willing to just go do that.
and he was told, he did his research. He went and he asked, okay, what is she like? And Celis came up with chess because he brought a gift the first time he came by the inn and met her, and he brought her a necklace with a little pendant that was hammered into the shape of a pawn piece. So
Yeah.
he did do his, I don't know, casual due diligence if you're going to be doing a random hookup with someone who you're probably going to see again later, about
Wow.
it's a
being.
very tradition. Sorry.
Yeah. Go ahead,
It's
Samara,
a
go ahead.
traditional courting type thing.
Yeah, because you want to make a good first impression, and it might not go well, but you want there to be, you don't want it to go badly just because you didn't think to bring a gift in the beginning. And he's a Drake. Drakes are all about, you know, giving and
Possessions.
receiving,
Possessions.
possessions, all about possessions. You're feeling sorry for him. I'm feeling sorry for Rags's tribe.
Ooh. What did you think of that section, the rag section, Mamsie?
I have to remember about that because I'm still I had thoughts
So, what?
about Cullis. That section made me kind of uncomfortable. I felt like Cullis was naive to the point of negligence, because, I don't know what Cellus. Again, it's possible that there are cultural differences and that nobody realized how naive Aaron is. But when she asks to touch his tail and he's like, all right, like, you want to give me a hand job? Sure. Which is just like.
I mean, if he went there looking for a hookup, I think his reaction would be, yeah, she gave, this is what happens in a hookup. I mean, if I went there for, if I
But it was
was going over
so,
to somebody's house for a hookup, the
well, is it?
it was so abrupt, and I don't know. It made me uncomfortable because I knew that Erin didn't know what she was doing, and so she was not a consensual participant in this sexual encounter.
Okay, that I could see, yeah.
I can see that, but so when the way that it flows, right, is he seems a bit surprised at first, and it isn't until more towards the end when he just kind of gets up and leaves that I think he catches on. Wait, she actually was not aware that this is like the equivalent of rubbing my shoulder and kissing the back of my ear. Like, I had figured, girl lives in a Drake town. My Drake friend says I should go and flirt with her because apparently she's looking for a hookup or whatever it is Cellus said. And then when he did catch on, he left.
That, I will say that he did do that. It was a miscommunication on both sides, and he didn't pressure or stick around or do anything creepy once he realized the situation.
The
Go
fact
ahead.
that she didn't understand why he was moaning was a little bit like, really? Really? You're that clueless? But
Apparently, I mean, it is supposed to be comedic. Maybe Erin is that
she's
clueless.
so focused that she doesn't process the other stimuli. That's
Yeah,
fair,
maybe.
possible.
Also, let's be honest, there's a world where we know for a fact Erin has, in her life, played up her denseness for her own purposes. And I think there's a world where maybe she was vaguely aware and just kind of ignored the voice in her head that said, wait, is there something weird about this? Because she really just wanted to touch the Drake's tail.
Yeah.
I did like the. Okay, so going back to the Rags thing, just the fact that Rags. Okay. Rags is young, and Erin reveals the birds and the bees to the poor girl, and she freaks out and runs away. I thought that was the best scene. I thought that was the most comedic scene out of all of this. Because let me just finish this. It's because that scene is the most accurate reflection of how what I thought when I was first shown the material that describes how babies are born.
I thought that Rags didn't. Okay, obviously we weren't in Rags's point of view, but she got up and she left. She ran out of the inn. Aaron's trying to explain stuff, and Rags is just aghast and leaves. And she goes back to her tribe, and the following day, Cullis comes back and some of the other female goblins in Rags's tribe basically attack him. I'm starting to think that Rags didn't necessarily run away because she was horrified by what she heard, but she wanted to verify with some of the older goblins about what this was and whether or not it was true or whether it was just a human thing and she could just ignore it from then on out. But the fact that
And
she told everybody else and that everybody else also then figured it out.
I never really understood that part where the goblins came and beat Cullis up. I have no idea why they did that.
Okay, so I God, so this I swear this gets mentioned in a later chapter, just from something from Rags's point of view, that like it wasn't exactly news to her or the other goblins. And that beating up Cullis was more because I think Rags thought that Cullis was unwelcome, or that like Aaron was angry at him. I don't know. Like, it feels out of place, and like I said, it's just so mean. Like, they're described as jumping up and down on his crotch and kicking the shit out of him until he just runs away. And he gets mentioned other times, and every time he looks like he's fucking a shell-shocked veteran with PTSD wanting to scream fleeing from the room.
Well,
Like,
yeah,
Aaron
wouldn't you
did
be afterwards?
spend the first few chess games complaining about it, though. So I'm thinking Rags took away this whole, okay, he needs to stay the fuck away from her. He needs to not do this anymore because she's distracted from playing chess against me and I can't have that. Go away and we're going to make you go away by beating you up. Oh, this hurts? Oh, let's do all of that. Yeah, that's just my assumption on how the goblins would have thought about that entire
Okay.
interaction.
I think we've.
It is very a point A to point B goblin reaction of, oh, you don't want him around? Sure, we'll beat the fuck out of him.
Okay. Okay, so let's wrap up. I think we've mostly exhausted anything. Did you guys have anything specific you wanted to say that we didn't cover? Because we've got author notes.
No, I
Okay,
think.
so author notes. Oh.
I was saying, no, I'm good.
Okay. So, author notes, pirate says, going into this side story, I didn't realize I'd have to be doing research into lizard genitalia. So, this brings up something interesting. Pirate would have had to do actual research into the various physical forms of the, like, they don't know, gnolls are essentially a fictional
Hyena.
speed. Yeah, so they'd have to do research into hyenas for gnolls, into dogs, into lizard genitalia. I wondered what their search history was like before after this
I
chapter.
mean, so fortunately, and God bless and God curse the fucking internet, I think the furry community had probably done most of the research
Oh my
for
God,
Pirate.
do you think they went to a furry site?
If Pirates was Googling this stuff, Pirate absolutely landed on furry sites, and
Or
God
they
bless those
landed
people.
on edited articles by furries, because
Oh,
yeah,
true.
that's we're gonna lay it out to you guys. Let's look at this from a scientific standpoint. I hope that's where they ended up anyway.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Maybe
So,
some of Aaron's shock and, seeming appalledness at all of this was a reaction to Pirate's unexpected search history results, right? Maybe they didn't expect to end up where they did, and they were like, oh, I'm going to portray Aaron shell-shocked in this same way.
Absolutely. Okay. So there wasn't a lot of comments that I particularly picked up on that were fun for us to read out, but one second. There was one though. Sorry, but I did find one. Just Nix on April 17, 2017 posts, "Oh my gosh, haha! I was dreadfully embarrassed to be reading such a thing in school and bursting into fits of laughter. Damn, I still can't turn off the smile and my face is cramping. Wow, you should really write more of these style. I can't even. I am speechless. You have managed to make the best comedic chapter I have ever read in fantasy web novels. And darling, I have read a lot of these things. You're one talented writer, Pirate Abba. Well, that or you have a very active imagination and a natural instinct for comedy. Thanks for the awesome chapter, heart, heart, heart." So, first, I think I was gonna riot until they added the web novels part as a qualifier because I've read way, no offense to Pirate, but I've read way funnier shit.
It's a very aggressive comment, and I mean, hey, if this is the one that just blew your mind and you just said Pirate's the best writer ever, I'm not gonna argue. This isn't the chapter that did that for me, but I can see it.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. The other one was Dark D on April 18th, 2017 said, "As nice as feminism is for the goblins,
Oh,
feminism
God,
could
no.
potentially." Yeah, let me finish this one. We gotta get through it. It's a good topic. "As nice as feminism is for the goblins, feminism could potentially doom their species. It could also be what allows their species to grow into equality with all the other species. I say it could doom their species because there are species that survive by outbreeding their hunters. Everything kills goblins, after all. If they can't breed fast enough, they could easily be hunted to extinction. I say it could be what allows their species to grow into an equal race because Now they can control their populations and they can start finding stable food sources. With Aaron's help, they may even be able to start farming. If that comes about, then maybe they can negotiate a peace treaty with the Drake Town. As far as the chapter goes, it wasn't written badly, but it was very awkward. It was a very awkward topic to read about. You should realize that too, seeing as how you yourself wrote that all men in the bar where the girls were talking ducked their heads and avoided the girls like the plague. Even Aaron had a hard time there. The goblin part was my favorite, though. I'm a sadist, and watching the goblin getting incredibly frustrated at Aaron's mastery of chess was very fun.
Everything about this comment is so wrong that I don't even know what to say about it, and I'm just gonna not.
I'm
Men
with
and
Dragonis.
girls,
I don't like any of it.
as nice
I
as
just thought it would
feminism
be.
is.
Yeah, this
Cool.
both fundamentally misunderstands feminism as a concept and assumes that somehow goblin feminism would then mean that they can't breed anymore.
I love the juxtaposition of trying to make species into race into species again. And
You know, I'm
the
sorry. There is one thing about this comment I don't disagree with. It was awkward to read about, and it was funny to me because they're not wrong that like every guy in the bar was just like sulking in a corner as they heard these girls loudly talk about their dicks.
I mean, yeah, again, I'm around a lot of lesbians and queer folks, and they are just more willing to talk about this shit, I guess.
No, I'll agree, and like I know straight people that have tried conversations like this in public places, and I go to the bathroom every time and wait for the conversation to be over.
So there's one night a week where my business is open a little later than usual, and a lot of my regular customers will come out, and we will sit and we will make things and we will talk and we'll just sit down and just catch each other up on everything that's been going on. And many of the conversations revolve around family, revolve around health issues, revolve around emotional difficulties we've gone through. It ends up sometimes turning into a, okay, I want to come out and hang with the girls and just get hugs, you know, that kind of thing. And there have been multiple occasions where someone has learned something about their own sexuality or about a name for something that they didn't know before just because we chose to talk about it.
I think
And the
those conversations come
explanations.
up a lot, and that's one of the values of those evenings is the honesty with which everyone approaches that and the willingness to educate.
Just having just, like I said, just having someone be willing to talk about more than just the physical act. Explain it, say it, talk about it. And I guess I grew up in the internet age and we always had access to the mechanical aspects of sex, but just having someone willing to say the words. The first time you have sex is gonna suck a little bit, but the second time it'll be better, and the third time it'll be great, and all you have to do is, pay attention to the other person and just try stuff. And laughing during sex when you're laughing with your partner is actually super sexy, and it's kind of fun, and it's really great. And if I knew all of that shit when I was much younger, my life would have been so much easier, and I would have been a lot less nervous.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, these are the kind of basic things that were missing from the chapter. But I think that's it for MR1, and we wanted to discuss MR2, but for this episode, we're all done, and we're going to post this as part of the normal progression of chapters. It just wanted to do this a little bit separately. What we're going to do is also a special episode right after this one, where we're going to discuss the other MR, which is far into the future, which will be heavily spoiled, very much for folks who have already read the novels, the entire series, or at least up to that point. And we're going to have a little bit more of a more deep dive into the other side, the more controversial side of what happened when Pirate tried another MR. Thanks, Dragonus, you have anything to say, or do you want I'm good to wrap up.
Nope.
Okay, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see you next time. Say bye, guys.
Bye, see
Bye.
ya.
Hello, and thank you for listening again to No Killing Goblins Extra Special Episode. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, we can always be reached at nokillinggoblin@twitter.com or at nokillinggoblins@gmail.com. Have a wonderful day.